Hola amigos, soy Gustavo Cuervo y me encanta estar en Ride and Talk con Andy y con las motocicletas BMW. Hey my friends, I'm Gustavo Cuervo and it's a pleasure for me to stay with Ride and Talk with Andy and all of us in this podcast. Thank you.
Hi everyone, Andy Jukes here and welcome as always to Ride and Talk. Before we start today's podcast, I just want to give you a quick test that I know you'll enjoy. Today's guest, Gustavo Cuervo, has written this cool new book about 100 years of BMW Motorrad. We'll be talking about that later, of course, among many other things. But inside the book, there are these QR codes you can scan and hear the engine sound of various bikes across the years. I'm just going to play three or four of them now, so listen carefully and see if you can identify them. Here we go with the first one. Was clearly a parallel twin, not a boxer engine, and one of the most fuel-efficient, underrated adventure bikes out there, in my opinion. Yep, it was the F800 GS. Okay, here's the next one. This was pretty easy, I guess. Four cylinders, incredible power and precision, and a bike to own the racetrack on. That'll be the awe-inspiring S1000RR then. Listen up for the third. How smooth is that? How many cylinders do you need for such an abundance of power? Does it matter? Ah, the joy of six and the thrill of the K1600. Should we do one more? Okay, this one's maybe not so easy, but we had to include a boxer in there, didn't we? Did you get it? It was the game-changing R80 G/S, and it's a nice link to today's guest, who has ridden this and every GS since on many trips around the world, amassing over 2 million kilometres on 5 continents. He's also a brand ambassador, a motorcycle journalist, and if you've ever seen the motorcycle film teams at the Olympic Games and other major sporting events like road marathons and cycling races, he's in charge of organising all that too. Even though he's in his early 60s, he's showing absolutely no signs of slowing down, and it took a global pandemic to keep him away from his beloved motorcycle travels. While grounded in Madrid earlier this year, he wrote the aforementioned book we'll chat about soon. But let's start our story in the early years of this century, when our paths first crossed, and he'd made a name for himself leading round-the-world relay tours on BMW GS bikes for those who had the ambition, but not the time or money to do the whole trip in one go. So welcome to Ride and Talk, Gustavo. It's great to have you on the line from sunny Spain.
Hey, Andy, how are you? Everything is fine here in Spain, but the moment.
Yeah, for the moment, for sure. Now, our paths first crossed in 2005, I think, when I wrote a story on you planning one of the most ambitious round-the-world rides ever seen. A relay ride involving four BMW R1200 GS adventure motorcycles, 120 riders, and 30 stages across the globe. Just tell me where you got that crazy idea.
Yes, Andy. Yes, our paths crossed in 25, I think. when I was preparing the logistic for the BMW Riders World Tour. This is very important success for me because I involved a lot of people, 10 different nationalities, riders across 5 continents. A long time ago now, the people normally has not too much money and has not too much time, especially for to travel around the world. And the people, everybody want to do a tour around the world. But this is very difficult because you need a lot of time and a lot of money. With this this system, broken the world in different stages, and the people is rely. The motorcycles was the same motorcycles, BMW R1200. 10 years before, I made the same with the 1100 GS, but only for the members of the club, BMW club in Spain. And this is a good system for us because all the people can do it in the dreams, but not to stay too much time traveling because I think it's a good solution. And we use it several times in these years.
Yeah, it's a great way to share an around-the-world adventure, that's for sure. But by the time you'd finished, how many kilometers had those bikes ridden in total?
And this tour around the world with the BMW riders, I think it's 120,000 kilometers by motorcycles. And we have really good experience with the motorbikes because nothing is happened. Yes, of course, it's very used, the motorbikes. But the engines and the main prices is very, very good. I really surprised for us because we don't need to repair any bikes and all the tour.
Yeah, that's remarkable, isn't it? And you repeated similar challenges several times, not just around the world relays, but also crossing the Americas from top to bottom and back again.
Yes, we use the same system for this. We start at Miami, and after go to Canada, and after go to Alaska, and come down all the America to the Ushuaia in the south, and totally the south, and after come back to another time to Miami. The same systems with the rely people, but this time we used the 1200 GS water collet, the GS Adventure, and we have any problem with the bikes, any problems. Only some punch, of course, but no more. Everything was perfect with the motorbikes. In this time, we ride around close to 100,000 kilometers by bike. But any problem, this is incredible.
It is incredible, isn't it? When you think about all the things that can go wrong and didn't, it just shows the reliability of those bikes, doesn't it? Now you've built up a touring company specializing in exciting adventures across the globe. But for nearly 40 years, you've also enjoyed riding solo too.
Well, I believe there are three basic ways for traveling motorbikes. Alone, with a couple, and in a group. There is a different advantage and disadvantage everyone. If you are traveling alone, is the most intimate. Of course, you need to speak with the native people and everything. But it's a little boring for me because you cannot explain directly with the another people. Yes, you can explain by these systems, by the technologies, but it's not the same. Stay with your wife or your friend in a special place, and you share the emotions in this time. No? The other time, the couples, is the best of the two worlds, no? You are close to alone and close to a group. And the group is sure is the funniest way to travel because the people stay very happy all the time. You can speak with the people on the dinner and share a lot of things. Another thing, in the special extreme adventures, I think the best is only three people because you can, if you have a problem, some people stay with the accidents, for example, two people, and the others can go to take help. No, if you are more than three people, for example, four people, you have democratic empath, and you have problems maybe sometimes, no? When the situation is very, very hard, no? But three people, is, I think, is the perfect number for to ride in extreme, really extreme adventures in motorbike.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because in many situations in life, three people together don't work so well. What is it they say? Three's a crowd? You're also a journalist, but like the rest of us, your travel plans were brought to a standstill in 2020. So you set yourself a new challenge, researching and writing a book on 100 years of history of BMW Motorrad. Where did this idea come from, and how did you enjoy the process of putting it together?
Yes, Andy, it's true. I could not organize this year the international meetings for motorcycle salons. We could not travel around the world, and the Olympic Games were postponed. I got this work and this project, the book that I had planned for 2023, but now I have the time for to do it. It was very laborious and interesting, looking for the information, looking tens of thousands of pictures from the official BMW and my personal archive, also from the archive of the International Federation, looking a lot of info. For me, it was very interesting because I discovered sometimes the history of the BMW. I know a lot, but in any case, we take another very interesting situations along the history of the of this brand, no? Especially for the journalists. I work in this book with three different journalists. Me and one journalist, especially in sport, in motorcycling sports. And these people said to me, I think the BMW is only a flat twin, no more, and no competition, no anything. No? And I'm looking now with the info for this book, and I'm really surprised with this. Why? Because they take a lot of victories, especially in the first times in the 20 years and the 30 years before the Second World War. No? And they write all the championship, the win in the championships, and he has four pages from the victories of the BMW in an international's homologate championship. This is really incredible for him. And for me, it's not too much surprise because I know what the BMW at the beginning, at the start of the company, they made a lot of records with the speed records with the compressor BMW flat twin. No? This is very interesting, and he's really surprised with this.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The sporting success was massive right from the early days. It was kind of like a bunch of enthusiasts, clever enthusiasts, engineers basically, who wanted to continually improve their product. And at the time, the only way to do that was on the racetrack, wasn't it? And to be faster than anyone else. So the book itself, what size is it? And are there any special photos that have never been seen before?
Okay, the size is 32 by 30 centimeters. It's around 13 to cross 11 inches. The heavy is 2.5 kilos. It's around 5.5 pounds. Has 316 pages and 708 pictures. It's around 15-20% is unpublished pictures because I take from my personal archive and also from the International Federation archive. These kind of pictures are really interesting because most of them I never see before, no? And this is very, very interesting, no?
Yeah. It'll certainly be interesting for the historians within BMW Motorrad to see pictures of their models in situations and countries where they've never seen them before. Now, you've also been involved with BMW Motorrad for many years as a brand ambassador. So I guess your knowledge of the models, stories and highlights was already quite comprehensive.
Yes, I am the BMW Motorrad ambassador, and thanks to this and my quality of journalist, I really tested all the motorcycles made by BMW from 80s to now, and some motorcycles made before 80s. I'm happy. I'm really happy for this, no? Because I test really all the motorbikes made by BMW from the 80s to here. This is not easy.
No, you're very fortunate for sure. So did writing the book change your perspective of the brand? Or maybe reinforce it?
Basically, I reinforce my consideration of the brands, learning some unknown aspect, especially from the history and models before the 60. But really surprised was for the journalist before I talked to you, because he think that the championship in the world is normally for the Japanese people, Japanese brands. But here's now is really surprised for this. And for me, some aspect of the ingenuity, some aspect of the history, especially with the during the Second World War, there is two factory BMW in the world, no? One in the East, in West Germany, and one in the East Germany. This is a really nice history. I learn a lot of the history, and this is, for me, it was very interesting to write this book.
Yep, can't wait to look at that book for sure. You're best known outside Spain for your global rides we've already spoken about on a variety of GS bikes over the years. And of course, in 2020, we celebrated 40 years of GS. So I'm interested to know how many GS models you've owned over those years, and which was your favorite?
Yes, I have riding every GS made from the 80s. Most of all, and in a long and hard off-road rides. For complicated adventures, for me, the 850 is the best, is my favorite. In the long travels, intercontinental travels, the GS 1250 is the best. But even the little one, the GS 310, is very fun to ride close to your home with your friends. I use it sometimes with my friends, a team, 3-4 people, no more, and very complicated in the mountains. And so we were very, very happy with this kind of motorcycles. For me, it's very difficult to choose, so I prefer everything.
Yeah, I guess what you're saying is that the latest GSs are the best, but they've always been good whenever you've been riding them. You're also a fan of older BMW bikes, though, aren't you? So which ones do you own and ride?
For me, by the far, it's the 1973 BMW R900S Daytona, the orange color. No? It was the bike of my dreams when I was young. For me, this is my preferred model of the BMW. I love it, this model. And now I have only BMW R1000 RS, of course, I call it. And a special thing, because you can, with this kind of motorbikes before the 80s, you can repair, you can dismounting, you can mount in all the bike, totally all the bike, only with the little tools, and you can repair in everywhere in the world. This is very important for me, because I traveled a long time ago, but this place is very difficult, and I need to change, to do reparations. And everybody can reparate this kind of bike. You don't need computers. Of course, the motorcycle, the modern motorcycles, is very superior to this kind of motorcycle, the old motorcycles. But it's a little romantic, no? You can take repair your own bikes. Now it's not possible with the modern bikes, because you need the computer, you need the special tools. But of course, the motorcycles now is riding very, very superior to the old bikes.
Yep, they're a lot more reliable for sure. But it was wonderful to be self-sufficient in the old days, wasn't it? So I'm going to move on now to the Olympic Games and just talk about that a bit, because as we all know, last year's Tokyo Games were postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and we're all hoping that the Games will be able to take place later this year, and also the Paralympic Games, of course. You're responsible, Gustavo, for leading a motorcycle team in charge of broadcasting the cycling, marathon, triathlon and athletic walking events to the whole world. That's some responsibility, but you've done it, I think, lots of times before. How did you get started in this fascinating role?
Well, my first Olympic Games as head of the motorcycles team was in Sydney to 2000. Before, I already had experience in this kind of work with dozens of cycling tours and marathons in Europe. I started with the Spanish TV for filming the Tour of Spain, Vuelta Ciclista España. And they called to us because we have little famous in riding motorcycles in the world, and for this reason they called to us because they think these people maybe to do very well. Yes, of course, I have a lot of experience also with broadcasting and to take pictures, and this is the beginning, no? I work now in the Olympic Games in Sydney, after in Athens, after in Beijing, after in London, and now we are working in Tokyo the next year. No? We have used different bikes, always a BMW. First is a R90 Bar 6, after we used the Key 75 RT, also the Key 1000 RT, Key 1100 LT, Key 1200 GT, after 1300 GT, and the R1200 RT, and now we use in Tokyo the BMW R1250 RT, the water cooler, of course.
Fantastic. Brilliant. So you've used just about all of them, really. What would you say makes the perfect motorcycle for TV transmission work then? And what technical characteristics must it have for best performance in terms of engine, low capacity, comfort, all those things?
Well, we need a bike what is very stable in low speed for the foot races, but fast in the and very agile to the cycling races, especially in the Stan Mountains. I must have a great load capacity for the technical equipment, and also be comfortable for the pilot and the passenger, the cameraman. Of course, I must have a minimum emissions and so on for no harm to the athletes in their effort. No.
Yep, there's a lot of things they have to do for sure. So how are the bikes modified to carry all that extra equipment?
Yes, we installed two side case similar to the used the luggage for the, but reinforced and ventilate for the transmitter. We put a transmitter on the rear grille and long handles. Specific supports for the camera operators can stand up comfortably and hold him firmly. In addition, a wiring to install it for communications with the realizations and team technicals. And also we use four mirrors, two by side.
Understood. What about the engine and gearbox? Are there any modifications in the gearing for extra battery power or engine cooling? I mean, you must spend hours riding at walking speed in hot temperatures for things like running races, or riding at relatively slow speeds for the cycle races.
Gearbox, motor, clutch and transmission are not modified normally. If we install the largest possible battery in the motorcycles and also another supplementary batteries in the side cases. About the high temperatures is true. We put a fan to work continuously all the time, and especially with the weather is hot, of course. And eventually, we installed another supplementary fan for the motorcycle in addition. Also, we have a little fans for refrigerate the equipment on the sweet gates, but no more, not too much more.
Okay, so fairly standard then. What about those camera operators, though? How do they stay on the bikes without falling off? Because a lot of the time they're filming standing up, aren't they? With both hands on the equipment, so to speak.
Well, I think that the most important thing is the experience. No, the camera operator must be as absolutely thrust on the rider, and the rider that the operator will not make a very sudden movement by changing the weights of their motorcycle. No?
Yeah, and of course you as a rider have to be 100% smooth and predictable all of the time. I guess you also need to be a fan and really understand all these sports that you're covering to be able to anticipate and react to what is happening all around you.
Of course, especially the rider, the pilot, must know the sport, its rules, its movements. I must place the camera operator to the best place, but without disturbing the competition in the less possible. We have to be, but not to be. This is the people want to stay the motorcycle, the camera, very close to the competition, and the competition they want to stay very far from them. No? This is a compromise, and the experience is very important for this, no? Of course.
Yes, you can't get the best pictures without being right in the middle of the action. But like you say, you almost have to be invisible at the same time. And you mentioned having four mirrors earlier, so I guess you spend as much time looking in your mirrors as looking in front of you, don't you?
Yes, true. A long time looking in the mirrors. Almost continuously, the motorcycle must react immediately to any movement of the competitors, and you need to look before the situation is problematic. No, it's not good. The cycling, for example, take to you because they use at closing the wind, no? It's very important to stay all the time and look at the mirrors.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite stressful for your heart rate. But who else are you in communication with while riding the BMW bike at these events? Because I imagine that there's a radio in your ear and transmissions and information coming at you all the time, just so you know exactly what's happening throughout a race.
Yeah, we have a direct communication from the director of the program, who is the one who indicates to us when each camera is on air. Science realization, they continuously inform to us about the race. It is especially about the favorite riders, no? Favorite competitions. Also, for possible technical problems, the technical manager has priority on the communication. We have a problem with the communication and has not a signal. What happened? We need to go out of the race for repair very quickly.
Yes, I guess it happens. And speaking about that technical equipment, I'm guessing that it weighs a fraction of what it used to. Now everything is digital.
Yes, it's true. At the beginning, the 80s, we carry a video. A videotape recorder and the weight that's weighted almost 30 kilos more batteries, like a truck. You know, this is very, very hard. No, but now it's more easy because the equipments are very less heavy and has a lot of properties, has a lot of technicals. It's more easy, much more easy, but. In any case, we use more and more technology all the time. GPS, now the temperature, now the distance, everything is going to the motorbike, over the motorbike, no? A lot of wires for all the time.
When you're not working or traveling, Gustavo, you live in the Madrid area. This is a busy urban center, so I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on e-mobility. Especially since you put that beautiful electric-powered concept roadster on the cover of your new book.
Electric mobility is the near future for the cities, I think. Whenever I can, I use the electric scooter around the city, but the autonomy is still enough for this trip outside the city. I'm living around 50 kilometers than Madrid, and we can use an electric scooter because 50 and 50 is 100. For the moment, we need to wait, no? especially for the batteries, but no more. I'm sure in the future the electric vehicles was the future for the cities, of course.
Yeah, and we've seen some C-Evolutions used to help film sports events. So do you think there is scope for more e-powered bikes or scooters in these situations? It must be a lot more pleasant for the athletes not breathing in the emissions.
Yes, of course. Electric scooters is already used for the photographers and youths of athletic competitions, but not yet for the TV motorcycles, because we have a lot of electricity consume a lot of electricity, and it is not enough for the motorcycle in TV. I'm sure in the future it's working, especially with the batteries for the motorcycles and for the cars, is more capacity. But now it's not possible, because if you take a lot of electricity for the technical equipments, you can down maybe can you you can do only 4 or 5 kilometers. It's not the solution for the moment.
Yeah, it's work in progress, but it'll come for sure. So Gustavo, when the world returns to some kind of normal, apart from the big Tokyo project, what else do you have planned for your travels?
I'm looking forward to getting back to normal, to go back a great motorcycle expeditions. In these times, I have begun to prepare several high adventures in Tibet and also in Andes in South America. But we still have to wait now. A little more patience.
Yeah, hopefully not too long to wait. So tell us, how can people get hold of a copy of the book, please, Gustavo?
Yes, everybody can buy the book in my personal web. It's www.gustavocuervo.es. If you write in a computer Gustavo Cuervo, you can find very easy, and you can order the book by this site.
Brilliant. We'll put that in the podcast show notes as well. So, Gustavo, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. The very best of success with the new book. And for sure, I'll be looking out for you and your team in Tokyo when the Olympic Games comes to town. Take care now.
Thank you very much, Andy, and greetings for everybody.
Thanks, Gustavo. What a life you've led so far. And great news that you're still itching to get out there and keep seeing our wonderful world on two wheels. Good luck with the book too. I should point out to our listeners that it's in Spanish language, but the pictures are fantastic and there are loads of them. Right, that's it from us today. Keep an eye out for Gustavo and his team at the Tokyo Olympics later this year. Or maybe you'll get to meet him at a motorcycling event near you. Or maybe even on the road. Take care and stay safe out there. Bye for now.